So in industrial agriculture, you have the combination of what has always been, so animals on the land, and then the finishing phase of those animals that are going to be put through market. That is, sometimes it's just 3 months, but they are on being fed grain that has its own its own little chapter, and we'll get there. The first part is when they are on the land, and for eons, animals co-evolve, herbivores co-evolved with the grasslands in a way and in a pattern of grazing that allowed those grasslands to continue to be healthy. When we removed those wild herbivores and replaced them with domestic herbivores, now nature's wisdom is replaced by human decision making. And we became more sedentary. We forgot about these patterns. And as a result, little by little, land began desertifying. And this is mainly because animals, when you remove the pattern and the natural behavior, they will start having a more sedentary behavior. They will be overgrazing plants. That is sort of like the fresh salad, as plants come up, but they go and take those tender leaves until the plant dies. And on the other side, all these other plants are over resting and become more decadent and start oxidizing, and they don't photosynthesize anymore. So you have this combination of overgrazing, in which plants cannot photosynthesize because they are too little. They are all the time being grazed, and those that are dying, and all these decadent plant material is covering all the beautiful, you know, all the growth spots that the sunlight needs to reach, and as a result, you have the worst of the worst. You have nothing there that is vibrant. So we need to change those patterns. We need to remove those grazing patterns that are not helping churn all this beautiful organic matter back into the soil and feed it and feed all these microorganisms. And so that is a whole important piece that we need to and we continue to work with pastoralists and farmers and ranchers around the world. How can we remove those grazing patterns and at the same time include the complexity of a landscape, very contextual, to allow for management to support whatever is there, including wildlife and whatnot? So that on one side. On the other side is, for the right reasons, maybe at that time we had surplus of grain, and we decided, okay, what we can do is to put it through animals to finish quicker and create the conditions for more profitability, if you wish, for the producer, which it was very a tremendous amount of hidden cost associated with that. We, you know, usually grains and fuel could be subsidized, and the true cost is not reflected in the final product. But what happens is, now all these animals come together in a place, and they are fed grains that they are not designed to eat. They become sick, acidosis, things that they are not supposed to be experiencing. But it's such a short time that before they get too sick, we
They're
slaughter them.
For
That's right,
markets.
and we eat them. But because they get sick, then they need antibiotics, and then all this beautiful manure that should be feeding the soil microorganisms in the pastures and in the grasslands is now a liability. It's just they go into methane, into pools, into waste, you know, areas, that and all that methane that really wouldn't be an issue on the grasslands. Actually, there are bacteria in the soil that oxidizes and uses that. Now it becomes a liability for climate too. So from a welfare, animal welfare point of view, from a health point of view, there's reasons why people do, you know, have an issue with livestock. But it's not the livestock, it's us making decisions on how we will raise livestock.
And is there something about how the livestock interacts with the soil itself? Because when they're free roaming and they're actually ranging around, that their hooves are actually maybe almost tilling the soil. Is that an element of it as well?
It is. And we talk about animal impact, not only the grazing. It's just almost like a gardener would understand. The whole idea is you try to create and manage the frequency and the intensity and the impact of the grazing, so it's just creates the right amount of disturbance, the right amount of soil cover. It feeds the animal and then it moves on. And in many cases, you create with livestock as a tool the conditions for other things to exist. And number one, we want to keep our soil as covered as possible, just like mulching in gardening, because that makes temperatures be more regulated. When the water falls, the rainfall falls, then most of it soaks in and goes to recharge water tables and creeks and all those things, rather than evaporating or running off as we see often, because our soils are so devoid of life and structure.
What are some of the barriers that you see right now to implementing, say, the Land to Market program that you want to have out there so consumers can be educated and can then act on all of these issues when they choose, whether it's leather or wool or fabric or meat? What are some of the barriers that are out there right now to implement this?
So I think the barriers that we find are, we need to de-risk the situation for the producer. There's risk in shifting management practices, for example, and there's investment required. So I think it takes a village. Now we need to all come together, the consumer understanding, so they can send the right signal. Policies aligning so we can promote and accelerate this type of management. The brand committing to supporting long-term the producers that they are sourcing from. And an investment in the supply chain that now is designed for volumes and efficiencies rather than for local artisanal type of production. And a lot of the real good producers are relatively small, you know, and around the world, industrial agriculture was what brought those efficiencies of scale. But so I think capacity building on the, you know, for the producer is always something that has been needed, and that support, that ongoing support. I think once we shift public awareness and we can align both the market and policy incentives to send a real signal to the producer, it's okay, that is what we want you to be doing. I think things will start going a lot faster.
And I think we also need a huge paradigm shift on the part of consumers, because right now people can buy a burger at a fast food joint for $1, or you can go and buy cheaply produced meat for very little money in supermarkets. And so we have also become addicted to cheap food as a consequence of industrial agriculture.
Yes, we have. But if we were to do true accounting, and we would look at the social liquidation of social ecological capital that we have had and our own health, we're investing in fixing within ourselves, in our health, and look what's happening with the climate, all the things that we're not willing to invest in food and fiber. And we're actually spending quite a bit of money in things we shouldn't, right? So it also requires consumers, us as consumers, to understand that we have this beautiful planet, that we have health that really is priceless, and that suddenly good choices, even if they may be perceived as more expensive, are actually an investment in the long term. And once we start shifting that paradigm, as you say, and we have visibility and information and education as to know the difference between one and the other, and I think things will change, should change. Now, that is very much what is in the United States and Western countries. In other countries, there's less of a choice. You know, you eat what you can and you eat what you produce. And still there's an opportunity to bridge some better practices and support some better practices, because policies may tend to push towards what we know has not worked already in these countries. So make sure we don't go that way.